If you're still waiting for a sign, here's another one. At California Psychics, we reject 98% of the psychics who apply to work for us. So we only connect you with the best. That's how we can guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. And right now, new customers receive 20 minutes for just $20. If that's not a sign, I don't know what is. Dramatic sound effect incoming. Experience the joy of certainty at CaliforniaPsychics.com.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, they're paying for everything. We're not paying anymore. We have an ocean separating us. I said, we have a problem. We make the best stuff, but we can't keep doing this. And Biden should have done this years ago. He should have done it from the beginning, but he didn't. He didn't know he was there.
So President Trump speaking earlier this week, I guess, with the director of NATO there side by side with him in the Oval Office, and really talking about how we're going to continue to provide Ukraine with the arms that they're needed, but it's not going to really be direct anymore. NATO is stepping in and kind of giving Vladimir Putin and Russia the heads up that we're kind of sick and tired of your games. At least that's my take on it. And I don't know what I'm talking about, which is why we have Jim Carafano on the show to explain where I'm wrong and what this administration is doing. Senior counselor to the president and E.W. Richardson fellow for international engagement at the Heritage Foundation. Jim, welcome back.
So we should start by talking about how really smart any Fry show fans are and the really smart decisions that they have made in their life, right?
Okay.
Because those who have been listening to this show for the last couple of years heard, you know, literally Nostradamus, things that were literally true that nobody else believed, but you and I said, this is going to happen. When Joe Biden got elected, we said over 10 million illegal aliens would flood into this country. We're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
When Donald Trump got elected, we said this will end decisively, and we were absolutely right. And the other thing that we've talked about many times on the show is that when Donald Trump becomes president of the United States, he is not going to throw Ukraine under the rug, and he's not going to abandon NATO. So those are big questions that a lot of other people question, but Eddie Fry nailed it. Just saying.
Because I am smart enough to have you on the show, Jim. What was your reaction to that relationship, the partnership? It seems as though President Trump is strengthening our relationship with NATO. Explain this to us on what this deal means.
Well, I mean, it really is in some ways a triple win. By the way, you know, it's not NATO, right? It's not NATO buying the weapons. I know he says that, right? But it's actually Germany and Norway. So it's NATO members. It's not NATO per se. It doesn't really matter, except it's just very Trumpian to say, I'm getting NATO to do this. But it's
you're
really
it's
the
political?
Germans and Norwegians. Well, of course it is. He's making the point is that, he's making the point that NATO had become the United States protecting everybody. NATO is a collective security alliance where members of NATO have to take responsibility, particularly things that are, you know, that are close to their own territory. You know, when 9/11 happened, NATO declared Article 5, which was great. But 99.99% of the lift of defending America was done by Americans. We all worked together in Afghanistan because we had a joint thing. But Ukraine is not a member of NATO. It's not technically a NATO problem. It is absolutely a big issue for NATO, and it is vital for the European members of NATO. And so he's saying, look, you guys should pick up the ball here. And this is exactly where we're going. So there's a couple of things here. One, of course, is Ukraine is going to get the weapons it needs to ensure that there will always be a free and independent Ukraine, regardless of what Vladimir Putin decides to do, peace, war, whatever. That's one. The second is, the U.S. taxpayer is going to get some relief here because instead of essentially giving this stuff away, people are going to pay for it. And that's going to take a burden off the U.S. taxpayer. The third thing, which nobody talks about, is we need to rebuild our industrial base. We need a lot more missiles. We need to replenish our artillery supplies and all that stuff. These purchases are going to go towards strengthening the American defense industrial base. So this is a triple win for the United States. And honestly, I don't know another president in modern history who could have pulled this off. I mean, Reagan couldn't even figure out how to get weapons to the Contras, but you know, Donald Trump, and without breaking the law, Donald Trump has achieved something that I don't think any other modern president, really since FDR kind of engineered Lend-Lease, nobody has done what Donald Trump just did.
That's impressive to hear that explanation, and it is deeper than I think is on the surface. It does feel very much like Trump strong-armed NATO, and they were like, please, please, yes, we would love to do this. But in the midst of
the NATO guys, they're thrilled.
They seem excited.
First of all, they're getting world-class weapons for the Ukrainians, because every Russian the Ukrainian kills is one Russian that the Europeans don't have to worry about. So they're strengthening their bond with the United States. They're helping a stronger American defense industrial base, which will be something that's going to is good for the Europeans as well. So they are the happy campers.
Yeah. Jim Carafano speaking.
Which means a lot, because I've been camping and there's nothing happy about that.
No.
So if you have a happy camper, it's really safe. Yeah,
I'm with you. I'll take the hotel room. Thanks. One of the things I heard President Trump speaking about in the Oval Office at that meeting, but he's, of course, said it many times. We hear a lot of people who are in government speak about the superiority of our American military assets, weaponry, our technology. He said the other day that we have things that are just unbelievable, mind-blowing. You wouldn't even believe the stuff we have. What can you tell us civilians here about the capacity of America, our defense system, compared to the rest of the world? We just got to see what they were able to do against the nuclear strikes in Iran. Are we as superior as we boast?
Well, there are some areas where clearly the United States is not only the world leader, but you literally can't compete. And as much compromising as we have done, under presidents, both Democratic and Republican, since the end of the Cold War, pretending that history is over, we need militaries anymore. The one thing we've never really compromised is on the systems that are unique to the United States, because we are a global power with global interests and global responsibilities, and we have to get everywhere in the world. And so there are some things that we do that literally nobody is in the ballpark. And submarines is one of them. Our nuclear powered submarines and the conventional, both conventional and nuclear weapons that they hold are something to behold. I mean, literally, you can launch hundreds of Tomahawk missiles from a submarine that nobody knows where it is, and you do not even know those missiles have been launched until they're banging on your door. So that's one. Of course, we're the only people with a strategic bomber fleet that is both literally invulnerable, pretty robust. We have a fair amount of these things, if you count everything from B-52s up, and just count an amazing amount of firepower, both conventional and nuclear. So that's another one. And of course, when it comes to strategic missile defenses, the ability to shoot a bullet out of the sky with another bullet, we are the world leaders in that. So, okay, we have great tanks. Lots of people have great tanks. We still have really the untouchable aircraft carriers. I mean, the Chinese are building aircraft carriers. Nobody knows if they can fight. Ours can really fight. And when you look at things like, in the stealth aircraft range, ability to evade radar and stuff, nobody can touch what we have, and not even the Chinese with basically the F-35 that they copied from us. So we're not across the board everywhere. We're United States is untouchable. Drones, for example, everybody has drones. Nobody has anything like the Patriot missile system. And the interesting thing about the Patriot missile system, which is what makes that system so scary good, is it can learn. And so the more things attack you, whether they're missiles or cruise missiles or hypersonic missiles or drones or stuff, the more the system, which is both a radar and a shooter, so it's a sensor and a shooter, the more they understand about those things and the more they can figure out how to engage with them. So actually, one of the things that's happened in this war with Ukraine is we've figured out how to make our systems go after a lot more of the things that the Russians are throwing at the Ukrainians. So not only is the Patriot missile kind of the world-class air and missile defense system, but it is actually getting better every day. So it's not across the board. It's not everything. It's not everywhere. We're not, 50 feet tall. We're not, invulnerable like the Greek gods. But some of these things are literally nobody can really touch what we do. That's fair.
And is that universally understood? Does Vladimir Putin, when he sees that President Trump, who says very, at least publicly, been willing to talk to Putin and Russia and have a conversation to achieve peace, when it's not working out and Trump seems to go a little bit heavier into the support for Ukraine, does all that factor into how Vladimir Putin makes his next move?
Well, I think they just say, well, he won't use these things. I mean, that's the Americans have these things, but they won't use them. And the one thing that has made Donald Trump really on par with Ronald Reagan as kind of the great post-war presidents is that they have both built militaries not to conquer the world, not to start needless wars, but to tell enemies, back off, Jack. And they've used those militaries just enough in a way that's not risky, but in a way that demonstrates that this is not a nation that you want to fool with. I'll give you a good example, right? One of the huge mistakes we made is when George Bush did the second invasion of Iraq, literally the entire world was in shock, including the Iranians, who were completely cowed. Then we made this stupid decision that we said, okay, well, we're not going to bother Iran at all. And then that was the Iranians' excuse to just IEDs and everything else and stuff. And so peace through strength is developing the capacity, but having a demonstrable, willingness to use it and not be reckless about it. And I think that what distinguishes a Trump from a George Bush on one end, who's maybe a bit reckless in some of these things, and an Obama or Jimmy Carter or a Biden, who are just afraid to do anything.
Well, we appreciate. I love that, knowing the strength, the flex that our American military is, and room for improvement. And it seems as though we have a president who's willing to invest in that continued improvement. It makes me feel safer.
I think so.
All right.
We are gonna be the masters of using artificial intelligence on the battlefield. I believe that, and that is going to take us another generation ahead of a lot of people.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm not trying to say that we got everything figured out and we're perfect and we don't have any vulnerabilities and there aren't areas where we're weak. I'm not saying that, but I'm only talking about the stuff that you and I know about.
Right.
I remember the day that, in the Panama War, when I was F-117 or whatever, the first stealth fighter flew its first combat mission. I'd never even heard of that thing. Like, all of a sudden this thing shows up and it's like, where did that come from? And this happens, right? I mean, sometimes we advertise these things, but sometimes we don't talk about it. I remember a guy who was with the cyber guy said, he goes, Jim, he says, we have some things that nobody else in the world even knows about. That was the good news. The bad news is we can't defend ourselves against some of these things. So, but I'm saying investing, and this is the mistake that we've always made as a country. We kind of get on this thing where we spend a lot of defense and then we don't spend anything on defense. And, we wax, we wane. The smart, invest in defense over time. It winds up being cheaper in the end. And it creates a sustained capability to make the world more peaceful, because there's an indisputable reality in modern human history. When the United States is actually strong in defending its own interest, and it is both feared and respected in the world. The reality is that the world as a whole is more peaceful. Now, it's not, I'm not saying there's no problems, no wars anywhere, and nothing ever bad ever happens. I'm just saying that historically, when America is strong and looks after its own interest, the world is more peaceful, not less. I'm not saying the world's trying to be the world policeman. I'm not trying to solve everybody's problems. I'm not saying take over the world, put the American flag up over Greenland. I'm just saying that when you actually just look after your own backyard, it actually ripples across the planet and makes bad guys say, I'm just going to go on vacation this year.
Yeah. Ugh. So much, like you said, the wax and the wane, so much that gets wrapped up right in the political sphere.
Right.
At least we have a stark comparison and can hopefully draw
right
from that.
Somewhere in the bowels of Beijing, there is a little altar where some tiny little Beijing guy is on his knees praying for the election of Gavin Newsom. I'm just telling you.
Somewhere. Let's leave him there. Jim Carafano, we appreciate you. Thank you for being with us today.
All right, buddy.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Good talking to you.
You as well. Bye-bye. Gosh, I love that. I could sit and listen to that type of stuff. Don't we all want to know that there are things that are so BA that we don't know about them, and God willing, we never know about them because that means we don't have to use them. Maybe find out about them in an air show 10, 15, 20 years after they've been in practice. I don't know. That warms my heart. That's for sure. Great to have Jim Carafano on with us again. In about 15 minutes from now, we're going to speak with Greg Jarrett, maybe 10. So keep it here. We're going to get to the bottom of the Supreme Court ruling yesterday regarding the permission. The ruling was essentially that the Trump administration can go on with the elimination of those jobs at the Department of Education. What does that mean? What was the challenge? All the legal expertise from Greg Jarrett, the Fox News legal analyst that we love to have on the show at 1:30. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show, the YouTube live chat poll. Can blue states be saved? Yes, no, or keep them blue? Folks, this is another close one in the poll. So please go to the Annie Fry YouTube channel and vote right there in the live broadcast. In the chat that's associated with it. That's why we call it the live chat poll. Have you guys seen J.D. Vance at Disneyland? Did you see the story?
Yes.
What was the story specifically?
Just the fact that he was there.
Oh, he was there?
Like,
oh,
how
yeah, I did
dare
see
he?
That.
we're streaming the video right now of the J.D. Vance run, and he's getting roasted.
Get those knees up there, big fella.
Yeah, what is it? What do people want
high
him
knees,
to
high
do?
Knees.
How would you explain, Ethan, J.D. Vance? There's a video of him. I don't know Disneyland at all. I've never been. I don't know where he's at in the park, but he's on his phone. He's standing next to his wife. Of course, there's Secret Service everywhere. He's got VIP tour guides that normally, if you go to Disney World or Disneyland, they wear plaid, but his VIP folks were in plain clothes. So he's surrounded by all these people. And all of a sudden, he looks over to the side and he starts to shuffle. And he runs away, and people are roasting him over his run. How would you describe his run?
The run. You know the way that Joe Biden used to, like very carefully walk without moving his arm as much?
He kind of had him out
like
to the side.
This is like the running version of that, where he's not really moving his arms much. And then he gets up these stairs, and all of a sudden he's pumping his
yeah
knees. So here's the thing. I think there's only two things that could have made him start running at Disneyland. One, he saw a kid that was about to, like, you know, jump into an enclosure or jump into some sort of, I don't know, area that he's probably not supposed to be.
A kid in danger.
Or he saw the Lightning McQueen area and he was like, oh my God, it's Lightning McQueen. Gotta go.
Hurry up. Get to the front of the line.
Only two options that make sense to see our vice president go
maybe he wanted a Dole Whip
like that.
Do they have Dole Whip at Disneyland?
What is Dole Whip?
Oh God, get out of here. Don't worry about it.
For real?
Like the whipped cream stuff?
No.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I got nothing.
We'll introduce you to Dole Whip. Okay. So this is, Brad, anything to say about the infamous JD Disneyland run?
I'm looking at that.
It is really goofy looking.
Yeah, I'm looking at that, and the only thing, the benefit of the doubt that I'm going to give him is based on the terrain around him, you can't see his feet, but it looks like he's kind of running uphill on some sort of like steps that aren't even.
Why is he not moving his arms?
Because he's keeping his balance with them down low.
No. Guys, this is what's happening. He, as you said, Ethan, I'm scrolling through his Twitter profile right now, his ex profile now, to see if he made a comment on this. Because it would be very much like JD Vance to be like, listen, guys, here's what went down. And just explain himself. I don't see that yet, but if anybody has seen him say anything about this, please send it to me at Annie Fry Show. There is something you do as a parent when your kid is about to do something probably super stupid.
He's like watching. He's like,
Dang
it, he's doing it.
Perks up and he's looking over to the side. His run, he's trying to approach the situation, which I don't honestly know what it is. I'm just inferring. With an L, like if you haul out Tom Cruise sprint to location, panic. Mm. Not to mention the fact if you're the vice president and you start going, like if you start going into a full on run, this guy, he's a Marine, right? Wasn't he?
Is he a Marine?
He's a Marine. This dude knows how to run. We do not have to qualify JD Vance's athleticism or physical fitness in the fact that he was a qualified Marine, and I think that was before they lowered the standards. So
this run screams composure. Like you said, if he's sprinting off, the American people are frantic.
Yes, and I think it screams, I think the thing, it just oozes of dad. Like, I'm going to creep up on this situation that's unfolding before it falls apart. And I'm like, this to me looks like, I think at the end you can see him kind of run around a corner. I think it looks like a kid was there. And then you, as a parent, you quickly scan everywhere because you're like, red shirt, blue shorts, red shirt, blue shorts, red shirt, blue shorts. Don't see him. Then you start to move in that place towards where the child was. Thinking, okay, obviously the kid's going to appear, and then they're not there. And with every step you take as a parent, when you can't see your child in a situation like that, you go faster. It's happening in real time. That's what I think. This is not, JD Vance does not need Annie Fry in St. Louis being like, he's a really good runner. Like, that's not what this is. I think Harry, is it Sisson? How do you say his last name?
That sounds right.
Sisson.
Whatever.
Harry Sissy, I think is what it is.
Man, I was going to say it, and then I didn't.
I did.
High five. he retweets this and like tries to criticize Jade, and I'm like, dude, you are not the one. You are not the guy to point at the Vice President of the United States who trounced Tim Walz. Like, what even is that? Tim Walz, Mr. Like, here, I'm going to hold this gun. How do I hold this gun? Mr. Midwestern, I drink beer when I'm fixing my car. Like, everything that the Democrat Party tried to do to emulate masculinism or, like, every guy, every dude, there has never been a more normal dude
than Tim Walz.
Shame on you. There has never been a more normal dude in the White House than JD Vance. Oh. And I will make it, I'll take it even one further. Everything that was forced down our throats over the course of decades of Joe Biden being a politician, everything we were told about Joe Biden was, oh, he's a family guy. He's Scranton Joe. He rides the train to and from D.C. He commutes to work. Like that's some sort of, like, oh, like the little people who actually have to drive, what? We have to go to work. But we just heard Chuck Todd and Jake Tapper in the last, I think, month say, you know, Joe Biden was always posed to us like he was one of us, like he was a super accessible person. He commuted to work. And they said that story could have easily been positioned to the American people in a way that said, actually, Joe Biden goes to work and commutes home to visit home.
Yeah, it was done that way, right? As a almost a forcing of this is how it had to be to show you. Oh, but he is normal. You don't.
Yeah.
No one does that with J.D. Vance because he truly is.
He's
just
super
a normal person.
He's probably a little too normal.
It's like, Ewan, get out of the corn dogs.
Yes, exactly. I don't think that when J.D. Vance saw this video, he's like, oh, yeah, that's totally normal. I think he got caught being a dad, and I love it. And no, it's not like the best, you know, point perfect sprint that you've ever seen, but that's not his concern. His concern's his kid. That's
Vivek,
my assumption.
That's not the fast pass line.
Let's take a quick break. Greg Jarrett on the Andy Fry Show next.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to the Andy Fry Show, the YouTube live chat poll. Can blue states be saved? Yes or no? Or keep them blue. You might think that you like them the way they are. Got a little something there for everybody. We are, looking at a lot of what this administration has transitioned to. After the Big Beautiful Bill was signed, there were a lot of investigations that were announced. And one of them was into Comey and Brennan.
President Trump, James Comey and John Brennan, now under criminal investigation related to the Trump-Russia probe. Do you want to see these two guys behind bars?
Well, I know nothing about it other than what I read today, but I will tell you, I think they're very dishonest people. I think they're crooked as hell, and maybe they have to pay a price for that. I believe they are truly bad people and dishonest people. So whatever happens, happens.
So that was the president's reaction there to Peter Ducey's question. Let's get to the bottom of what this investigation might actually mean. We welcome back to the show Greg Jarrett, the Fox News legal analyst, former defense attorney and law professor, and author of The Trial of the Century and The Constitution and Other Patriotic Documents. Greg Jarrett, welcome back. It's good to have you here.
Oh, good to be with you, Annie.
This investigation is launched. Of course, you know how the president feels about these individuals. I don't really blame him. What does an investigation mean at this point in time?
I think it's inevitable and absolutely merited that a special counsel be appointed. You don't want the Trump administration, the DOJ, to be themselves bringing the case against, you know, Democrats and political opponents. So I think a special counsel is appropriate. But look, for almost a decade, you know, Trump suffered an onslaught of lies and smears and fraud, deceit, even forgery. Nearly all of it was done by unscrupulous government actors who hated him personally, loathed his policies, and they abused their power and weaponized the law by manufacturing phony documents, crooked investigations, cooked up criminal charges, and they acted in concert with a common goal to sabotage Trump's electoral chances. And, you know, under the law, that would constitute a criminal conspiracy, an agreement to commit illegal acts. And it seems as though, I mean, the evidence is plain that they planned it, they acted together, they schemed, they connived. So I think if appointed a special counsel would look not just at things like false statements by Comey and Brennan, but a larger, overarching conspiracy to defraud the government and deprivation of rights under color of law. Those are both crimes. And in other words, using knowingly false or fabricated evidence to support cases against Trump for political reasons. And, you know, the most obvious was how Comey and Brennan exploited the bogus dossier as this basis to launch the FBI investigation of Trump, to obtain spy warrants, even though they knew that this Hillary-funded document, the dossier, was total garbage. nearly at the outset of the investigation, they debunked it. They actually fired Christopher Steele for lying. But, you know, they told none of that to the public. They didn't tell it to Congress. They certainly didn't tell it to the FISA judges when they obtained the spy warrants. And then they used what they knew was a junk document to try to entrap Trump at the infamous Trump Tower meeting days before his inauguration. So I think you put all of that together and you see this illicit scheme to smear and frame Trump.
Yes, certainly. And we've been hearing about it now for 10 years, about President Trump's, then-candidate Trump's relationship with Russia, among some incredibly ridiculous claims that did stem out of that dossier. People still cite those claims today. They still kind of treat that as gospel, even if it's just willfully so. What kind of consequence comes along with, should these be allegations that you're saying right here, should they be charged and found guilty? A lot of people who have supported Trump this long want to see the perp walk. They want to see the handcuffs. They want people in jail. Is that likely?
Well, it's too early to be able to say. There are a couple of obstacles. First of all is statute of limitations, because you're talking about crimes that are well past the standard 5-year statute of limitations. But there are a couple of ways around that. First of all, there's the fraud concealment exception. If documents are deliberately concealed and fraudulently withheld, that tolls or suspends the statute of limitations so that it only begins ticking the moment you discover those concealed documents. Another way around it is to allege, you know, this overarching ongoing conspiracy where the statute of limitations starts ticking based on the last act in the conspiracy. So, for example, if you count the Mar-a-Lago raid as part of the ongoing conspiracy, then, yeah, you not only beat the statute of limitations, but that allows you to avoid bringing a case in Washington, D.C., where you can never get a conviction against Democrats there. I mean, Trump got 6% of the vote last November. So you could bring the case in a conspiracy charge in Florida, where, you know, obviously it would be a lot more of a neutral venue than the nation's capital.
Well, it will certainly be something that I know that our listeners will be paying attention to, and I'll direct them to your opinion piece on FoxNews.com, where you talk about how the CIA report makes it clear Trump was framed. And people can read that in detail. It's a great piece, and I recommend it. I wanted to ask you about the Supreme Court ruling yesterday regarding the Department of Education and the Trump's intentions there. What did we learn from that ruling on how the Trump administration can proceed?
Well, it was one of the easier decisions to make. You know, the president has executive authority under Article 2 to hire and fire. The only question was, can he fire everybody in the Department of Education? And as the Supreme Court pointed out, you know, that's not what he did. Correct me if I'm wrong, about 1,500 jobs, or at least 1,500 jobs are slated to be cut, but that still leaves employees of the Department of Education. And as the Secretary of Education pointed out, we will still, with the remaining employees, abide by our legal obligations pursuant to the statute that created the Department of Education decades ago. And the Supreme Court pointed to that and said, as for all the other employees, you know, they can be fired by the President of the United States.
Well, we'll continue to watch the developments there as the administration moves forward in reforming, if not eliminating, the Department of Education. One other question on a separate issue, since I have you, we're speaking with Greg Jarrett. It's an honor to have you here, and I want to pick your brain a little bit here on the continued developments that come out of the auto pen story. Some are calling it a scandal. I'm wondering if scandal is as bad as you anticipate this story developing, or if there is any part of the Biden presidency, should they be able to prove that he was unaware of anything the auto pen signed, is any of that undoable?
Yes. If he did not consent or have knowledge, then any document that bears his signature is fraudulent and a forgery under law, which, by the way, are crimes. Look, the use of an auto pen is not by itself against the law, as long as, I say, you know, there's consent and knowledge. But here we're getting evidence, including, you know, from Biden himself in, you know, his interview with the New York Times, that, you know, some people seem to have been receiving directions from him that he was authorizing them to make decisions on when to use the auto pen. The president cannot delegate authorization. He can only direct it. And so, for example, Neera Tanden, among the first people to be interviewed in the Oversight Committee investigation in the House, said, yeah, I was in charge of the auto pen, and I would send requests to the inner circle, and I never knew who approved it. Now, that is troubling, because if it wasn't Biden who directly and specifically approved specific documents, then, you know, arguably those documents are null and void.
So is the burden of proof on knowledge or, you know, authorization by President Joe Biden, is that burden of proof pretty steep, hard to do?
Yeah. I mean, look, I think I'll give you an example of what could prove to be a test case. So Senator Rand Paul has made a criminal referral against Anthony Fauci to the Department of Justice for lying to Congress. And in my opinion, Fauci did lie, you know, about funding dangerous gain-of-function research at the Wuhan lab, which I suspect is where the virus emerged. So he arguably had a direct hand in creating a pandemic that killed, you know, millions of people. So, and he didn't, I've watched his testimony. He didn't seem to be telling the truth. He was denying it, and yet documents belie that. So if the DOJ were to charge Fauci, he would assert an affirmative defense, which is, I have a pardon. That shifts the burden then to the government to prove that the pardon is null and void because it wasn't directly signed by Joe Biden. The question becomes, did he direct it? Or did other people make the decision to issue the preemptive pardon?
Well, all of these stories up in the air and progressing, and your legal expertise is always very much so valued here on our show. Greg Jarrett, thank you for the time today. We're glad you're here.
My pleasure, Annie. Take care.
You as well. Bye-bye. Greg Jarrett, Fox News legal analyst, former defense attorney and law professor. Great book, The Constitution and Other Patriotic Documents. A good one to have in the home and on the shelf, just for reference points. All right, let's take a quick break. Ethan's going to come back in here. Ryan's out for a few days, and Ethan is playing Ryan. And we always have these off-air conversations like, how does one actually do that? How do you emulate Ryan? And I'm like, don't try. Just be yourself. Glad to have Ethan in here. Glad that Ryan's getting a few days off with his family. When we come back, we're going to pick up on some of the Wiggins America points that we didn't get to. And we're also going to ask you for our 2:30 segment. Trisha's going to join us. X's and Y's. What are some questions you have about the opposite sex? Why do you go to the bathroom in pairs or groups? Those types of things. Hit us up on the Annie Fry YouTube channel and leave your questions there. Quick Rick just left one for us that I set aside for that segment. Maybe we'll get yours in as well. We'll be right back. So we were talking in Wiggins America just an hour ago about signs your coworkers don't like you.
Yeah, you know, so for if you missed the beginning of that or of these points, the reason that this was the Wiggins America topic, and, you know, obviously Ryan's not here. You hear a nice, more refreshing,
you might think
better sounding voice. That would be because I am Ethan.
That would maybe think that you were doing this just because you were trying to pick on Ryan.
Well.
But
I asked Ryan, I was like, hey, you know, any good thoughts as to what the Wiggins America topic should be any of them when you're gone. And he, I mean, it was really weird. It was like he almost had this ready. Like I was, as soon as I finished asking the question, he's like, here.
He's been
like,
carrying it for 2 weeks waiting for you to ask that question.
And the title of this article was Six Signs That Your Coworkers Don't Like You. It's like he knew I was going to ask.
We don't need to discuss them, but just list the ones we've already said.
The ones we have listed so far are they rarely include you in group discussions. They show negative body language when talking to you. They never celebrate your successes, and they avoid working with you.
So these are subtle signs.
Just
all right, subtle. Two more. Let's get to wrap that up.
The last two, the first one, they give you short and curt replies. When you ask your colleagues more in-depth or open-ended questions, and they only give you short yes and no replies, you may start wondering why this happens. So let me ask, does this happen to you guys ever?
No.
At work?
No. Yeah. Thank you for the short and curt replies.
Dang it. Yeah, I was trying to do a thing.
Ryan totally would have made that a longer, drawn-out question, and he would have just filled it with random words, and it would have been way better, but, you know, it's okay.
It's. I think our environment is a more difficult environment to measure brevity and directness.
Because there's only so much time.
Literally, mm-hmm. We count our day in seconds, and you may or may not have even noticed, but our clocks are a little bit different now, and so shorter commercial breaks, we're trying to be quicker and to the point. So there's no time to be like, hey, buddy.
Or to even say, like, I have to go pee.
Yeah. It's run out the room and go, gotta pee.
No, I'm serious. Like, you can't even say, I have to go pee. Uh-uh. That takes up too much time.
Yeah.
You take away from time, you could be peeing.
Yeah, exactly. So,
anyway, it says to handle the issue, consider explaining to them that when they help you, you can complete your tasks in less time, which helps the entire team improve its performance.
You can be direct and not a jerk, though.
For sure. There's a difference.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes that's where the emotion comes in, too. Right? It's like, well, you're being mean to me. So no, I'm being direct. I'm saving time. You softy. Yeah, that's a little mean. That part's a little mean. All right. The last one, they undermine you. For example, they may do this by publicly discussing mistakes you've made. That's brutal. And still learning about new process or interrupting when you're speaking during meetings. There are obvious ways in which you can handle this. You may start by ignoring their behavior and hoping they stop. If this doesn't help, consider addressing the issue directly. I love that that's it. Just ignore them first.
No.
If that doesn't work, then point it out to them.
I think if we're talking about coworkers here, the ultimate question has to be, is the job getting done? Whatever widgets you do or whatever service you provide, are things going swimmingly? Is the job getting done very well? And if it is, and you're experiencing these things, that is a personal relationship situation. If stuff isn't getting done and things are going this way, then we're going to have to reflect on how all the parts can work better to get a more successful product.
The honorable mentions, you're the newest team member, they've heard you gossip, or you've taken days off, too many days off.
Ryan!
Coincidence?
Yeah. This is really about widgets. He'll be gone for another 2 days. Let's have some more fun. X's and Y's in the next hour. Don't go away.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.